Whiskey, you say? Make mine a triple. It's time to start harping on rugby. Hello, my name is Jeff Pagano and welcome to Harping on Rugby, where with the help of some fellow fans, I get the chance to harp on what's going on with Leinster, Ireland and the wider rugby world. First up, joining me this week is someone back for his 49th cap. A warm welcome to Mr. Mark Jackson.
Evening, gents. How are we?
Hey, good to have you. And also with us is the curator of a great rugby news aggregator accounts on X and Blue Sky. Hello once again to Mr. Rugby Kino himself, Kino Miller.
Hey, Jeff. How's it going? Thanks for having us.
Indeed. Good to have you on. Okay, well, let's crack on with our feature match of the week, which was, of course, Leinster v Leicester Tigers in the round of 16 of the 2023-24 Investec Champions Cup, which was played at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday evening. The weather in D4 was dry and bright around kickoff time, but the driving wind, which had plagued the capital, was still around, even though not so much maybe at pitch level in the stadium. Mike McCarthy and Leo the Lion went through their pre-match ritual, with Mike, who apparently is now identifying as Devon Toner, also sporting a Viking hat this time as they helped the 40,000 crowd create an atmosphere. Caelan Doris won the toss and elected to play towards the north stand in the first half, and it was the Leicester Tigers who got the match underway, Mark.
Yeah, very quick start from Leicester. They got into their patterns quite sharpish. We look to be a little bit off the pace, to be honest with you, which is something that we're not used to with Leinster, really. They sort of got a dose of their own medicine there in the first sort of 7-8 minutes before we got a hold of the ball. And Leicester really showed some ambition in the first few minutes with the ball in hand, and they certainly were very un-Leicester-like in terms of how they approached that start to the game. They're normally known for their box kicking or kicking for a position early on. But they ran some lovely lines. And for me, the first try and both Leinster's reply come down to one thing, is speed of ruck. You know, it doesn't matter how good your defensive shape is. If your speed of ruck that you're facing is quick, is under that 2-second sort of barrier, it's hard to reset any sort of defensive shape. And Leicester certainly exploited that early on, and a nice little offload, I think, for Dan Kelly after some good breaks by both backs and forwards, put Andre Pollard pretty close to the sticks as well. And it was a really, really good try and a well-deserved start from Leicester. You're talking about 6-7 minutes then before, after the kickoff, before we even got a touch of the ball. And then, you know, it was almost like we held it for the next 5-6 minutes exactly like Leicester had done. We had really attacked outside shoulders and looking for space. And Jameson Gibson-Park ended up scoring a first try after a couple of lovely pullbacks in midfield. And Big Joe McCarthy galloping through, showing some really nice skills. And then a beautiful inside line from Jameson Gibson-Park, which he showed throughout the game. And any young scrum half looking at his performance, the one thing they'll notice is the second he passes, he's away again. You know, he ran so many good inside lines, scored his first two tries off it. But the first sort of 20 minutes were a bit helter-skelter. Leicester had a good start. We replied. We ended up then taking a 10-7 lead. And sort of first, we got a penalty. But the speed of ruck from both teams when they were on the attack was quite impressive in the first sort of 20 minutes. If they had gone for it, might have caused us more trouble. They did later on. But they sort of, when they had the ball there in the first 20 minutes, they settled back into their old ways of slowing down quick ball. And I'm not too sure Jack Van Portfleet, his amount of box kicking allowed Leinster to get back into the game. In the first 20 minutes, we sort of dealt with his box kicks quite well. But we then kicked back quite a lot to Freddie Stewart, seemed to be all over the place, although he was wearing number 14. But then after some kick tennis from both teams, Hugo Keenan did a bit of a wobbler of a kick, but it ended up with a knock on from Stewart, which I think you lot mentioned with the Irish commentary talking about how solid Freddie Stewart was under the high ball, and then commentator's cursor arrived, and Stewart knocked on and gave us a very nice attacking platform with a scrum about 10 meters out from the Leicester, or sorry, yeah, from the, in the into the Leicester half.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot with we've seen a lot of teams come to play Leinster, and obviously, you know, they're going to have a plan to make some headway from the start, and you often see them get that first score. It's actually not too surprising for Leinster fans to see us go behind in the early stages of a game, but you sort of take comfort in the fact that, well, we'll see what we do when we have the ball. And we were showing signs, like even before that try, we got a penalty, and that was part of what we already had a penalty advantage, but then Gibson Park got that little bit extra with a little snipe. A lot of people will talk about his hat trick, and it was incredible, especially first half from him. But there was other things he was doing as well, as little sniping runs. He even made a couple of good tackles at some stage, and he was doing all sorts around the pitch. And it was just, you could see that when we had the ball, that we could make something happen. And as you say, that run through from Joe McCarthy, and just the trail line, he knows Gibson Park is going to be there, and finished off the try. So that made it that got us back into it. We were 10-7 ahead after that, you know, kind of shaky start. And then, like you say, the high ball was always going to feature at some point, and it was causing both sides problems. I mean, we had Freddie Stewart. That was a bit of a knuckleball, maybe, that came down towards him. It wasn't the easiest, but we had some issues ourselves later on. But anyway,
well, sorry. One thing that was really apparent at the start of the game was how ferocious Leicester were attacking our breakdown. You know, they conceded a few penalties. The referee was pretty harsh on some things, but he was also very spot on with Leicester guys putting their hands on the floor before picking the ball off the ground. So they gave away what I would consider silly penalties on position. You know, in the middle of the pitch, they weren't exactly under pressure as such. They had time to reassess. But I think when you play a team like Leinster that do live off of quick ball and the snipes around the corner, it's so hard to reset. You expect that first man in as the tackle assist, he has to slow it down. He has to slow it down some way. But they were just a little bit on the illegal side from joining from the side, kneeling on Leinster players as well. So there was at least two or three of those penalties that you could have given one. You could have given a couple of reasons why those penalties were conceded. So, you know, that's a distinct system of attack / defence from Leinster that just didn't work out for them in the early phases, and they gave away some cheap penalties doing it.
Yeah, and speaking about penalties that might have been given, I mean, before that Freddie Stewart spell, we had the game's first couple of scrums, and where it was, we get frustrated by resets as it is, but this was kind of a different thing. He was given a lot of free kicks
at scrums. Yeah, normally referees now they'll give you one free kick and then straight away to a long arm penalty afterwards, but there seemed to be a series of free kicks given, and the captain's decisions, you can't really blame them, you know, because you're either going to kick away possession if you kick it into touch, or you kick away possession in the hope of regathering from a Gary Owen. So the supposed best way of getting back the ball securely is another scrum, and we were subjected to a lot of scrums in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I get the idea of where, okay, if they do it the first time, we'll do a free kick. And if they do the same thing again, then it's a straight arm penalty. But the thing is that what if the next infringement is another free kick and it's for something else? Then you've got free kick after free kick after free kick. And then you have to almost take out a chart and tick off, okay, now have we had that before? And it just get, you know what I mean? It can get a bit farcical, but
there are some referees that do that, but then there's some referees that just go, if it's a free kick, fine.
Yeah.
The next one, it doesn't matter what offense it is. It's a straight out.
Yeah.
It's a straight out penalty. And I think, although we have quite a few contributors here that are ex front rowers, you know, even we're bored out of our heads with it, and you want the game to go quicker.
Oh yeah. Oh no, no. If you're anyone who's in the front row, all the calls are wrong. I mean, that goes without saying. But it's just how the referees are interpreting them, you know. So anyway, yeah. So Freddie Stewart spilled that, and we had another scrum handing over to Keno.
Yeah, that was a scrum to Leinster off that knock on, and guess what? It ended in a free. This time for Furlong taking a step back. Was the call anyway? Yet nobody called that receipt. It was still kind of sixes and sevens, but nobody called that kick receipt. Then Leicester gave away a penalty for going ridiculously horribly off their feet, dived. I honestly, he could have landed in the try zone instead of on the ruck. He was so far past it. And then from the line out, the subsequent line out, we knocked it on. It was just all over the place. Leicester were trying to kick it in behind, looking for space, but we were covering things well. But then, yes, Keenan, an innocuous enough run back from a kick receipt, goes through a few phases, and Henshaw gets a bit of a half break, lightning quick ball on that ruck, earns a 3-on-2 on the short side, Gibson Park spots. He sucks in both of those defenders with the cover swinging in behind, but slips the two tacklers and then takes the cover man as well. Then a lightning quick ball again off of a McCarthy heavy carry from that position, and then Sheehan breaks down the 5 meter channel, no better man, draws the last man, and Gibson Park deserved to be put away for that, because that was a wonderful sequence of play. Then restart off of that was cleared to touch, you know, fairly standard. Leicester, yeah, they got good go forward from there, actually, and they were really good value throughout the game. I have to say, they really exceeded my expectations throughout in terms of performance. They gave it a good shake and they didn't stop. It was great to see, given some of the lackluster ties we've seen at times in, well, maybe not the round of 16 so much, but they don't always go well, the travelling sides. But yeah, they got good for go forward off of that. But the scramble D covered that well. And actually, the scramble D has been quite good. The D overall, actually, throughout the day was quite good. And the scrambles improved as well, which is obviously a huge part of Nienaber's defensive philosophy. With that rush defense, you need to be able to scramble in behind, and that does seem to be coming together a little bit better. It was quite shaky at the start of the season. Sixes and sevens again for a little while. Leinster got a line out from a restart after Leicester took three for a penalty for not releasing. Line out straight to the punt, and we looked to, I think we were using our multi-phase to concentrate the defenders in the middle of the park. There was a couple of switches and changing a direction. We were really concentrating in the middle of the park, and by the time there was about four phases gone through, we got to a stage where you had nine defenders either within about 5 meters of the last ruck or on the wrong side, which is again spotted. The opportunity is there. Henshaw and Osborne go into a 2v2. Osborne's defender is slightly ahead of his partner, so it's you couldn't call it a dog leg, it was so small. But Robbie times the pass on his defender perfectly to exploit it. Osborne blows through, nearly blows when he passes to Gibson Park too early. He hadn't drawn his man at all. There was only one man there, and that could have gone very badly wrong. But Gibson Park rides that tackle really well and finishes it out. So at this stage, Jameson Gibson Park is on a hat trick at 30 minutes. In a match which was later described by a certain journalist as limping, which is, let's say, poor choice of words, really. I mean, to be honest, a hat trick in 30 minutes from a single player is phenomenal. It's insane. You know, if it was DuPont, it would have been headlines, you know, rather than to lose or limping to a win in a knockout match. But sure and all, in any ways, one of the most, probably the call that annoyed me most in the game happened next. There's a call in the scrum where Cole went straight to his knees, and it was called against Porter for standing up. We could see it in the stadium, let alone while I've been watching the back ring for this. It was absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, it was obviously his elbow doing something wrong at some point.
There was no one there to hold up his
yeah,
elbow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I mean, that it was horribly obvious, and that none that, that the touch dodge either didn't get in the ear or was ignored when they did. It was a bit lackadaisical. I have to say, other than that, looking back at the match for this, the refereeing was actually quite good. So I won't complain about it too much, but that call did irk me. Yeah, Tigers going through phases, not really getting anywhere very fast. They did have a nice run up the side, which Keenan just about blocked with his foot. Of a grubber going through, which almost definitely would have been a try if it had gotten past him. Going through multiple phases after that, and then Joe McCarthy yet again with a beautiful rip turnover. He does seem to make a habit of those, and I do like a rip. And you could argue that Leinster haven't been as turnover focused as we could be at times. I know it doesn't always suit the play style, but it just feels like there are opportunities there sometimes that we're going to bang. So to see another player who can come in and really do a fantastic job at taking away ball that really might not always be accessible to another player. It's great to have in the armory. Yeah, the next one after that was it was cleared, line out, few phases, and then Porter decides he doesn't like the look of the Tiger scrum half and absolutely mullers him before the ball is out. I know it was
see
a penalty.
You could see it in his face. He knew exactly what he was doing, and he just went, F it.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Who amongst us hasn't wanted to just muller a scrum half?
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Who amongst us hasn't tried it?
Yeah.
And had the same outcome.
Yeah, no, I have to say, even in the stadium, I was like, yeah, I'll allow that. That's fine. I'm okay with that one. They down into our 22 with the line out. They get a decent maul going. But then they were penalized for encroaching the 10 meters before the ball's out. I can't remember the last time I saw that called, if ever.
Oh, is that the one where he was going one way and he went
confused the hell out of everyone. I didn't know what was going on until I got this review, and I was like, oh, okay, that's what it was called.
Yeah.
offsides are kind of rare enough as it is, but encroaching them all, that's it's been a while. So yeah, logos quickly from that. Few phases. Again, Henshaw and Osborne link up with a nice little offload. It's a nice little, I mean, it's a very young partnership, but Osborne, I really think, has kind of raised his level to some of the kind of the front liners. I think he did really well. I really like him as a player, and I think there's serious potential there for him. And he was certainly not out of place in this game. Yep, Gibson Park then finds Ross, who has draws two defenders and pops a nice softball out to Lowe and Sheehan, and we're up the other end of the pitch. While it was kind of a bitty quarter in parts, just the ability to shift things on and either score tries or move play all the way up to the other end of the pitch just kind of showed when it was needed to be done.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about that first half, when the team was named, there's a lot of chatter about Ross Byrne. And, you know, people were surprised Harry did so well last week and Ross is just getting his way back from injury. Maybe they could have gone a different way, as if that was the most important aspect of Leinster's offensive production. But I think that first half showed just how much more we rely on Jemison Gibson-Park for that. And I'm not saying it's irrelevant who's wearing 10, but when it comes to what's where Leinster are going to get their scores from, when Leinster, especially when it comes to literally making something out of nothing, it's him that's able to do it. And he just did it again and again with that almost magnetic support lines more than anything else. He was just exactly in the right place. And but like you say, that time when it wasn't the most perfectly timed pass to him, he does have that kind of a winger speed that he's shown, and he is able to ride tackles and get away from them. He's got those little extra qualities that aren't just scrum half qualities as well, that able to make things happen. And we just saw all of that in the first half. It was kind of his half, really. Another aspect, I think, to the game as well, there's something Bernard Jackman pointed out as well, that We missed Gary Ringrose. It looks like we're not going to see him next week, but we had this combination now of Osborne and Henshaw, and they were kind of swapping roles. You know, did you notice that a little bit? They were kind of attacking 12, 13 and then going the other way.
I did notice that they're kind of swapping between offense and defensive positions in the those center channels, and it was fairly fluid. I mean, sometimes there was a little bit of purchase got by Tigers, in fairness. But like center partnerships famously take some time to gel. So
it's really reminiscent of Gus Scott and Carling, who played left and right. If you looked at Henshaw, that they're not exactly swapping. They're just staying in their channels on the pitch for quite a bit of it. You know, and that, I noticed that as well. And Jackman brought it up really, really well then, if that's the case, because I think Jamie Osborne isn't the usual Ireland / Leinster centre who's a big crash ball expert. You know, he can play, but Robbie can play as well. You know, he's not always been a centre. He's been a fullback in his time before, and you know, he's been a centre for years and that. But he can pass as well. He's probably more of an offloader than that fluid passer. But Osborne certainly can play both channels really, really well, and it's. It's got a lot of potential. It's got a lot of potential.
Absolutely. Of course, if you can't have Gary Ringrose actually togged out, it doesn't hurt to have him running on the pitch with the water every so often, maybe pointing out a few things that might have been spotted, what's coming from the other team. But no, listen, it was, like you say, things weren't going all our way in that first half, but we were making it count. We were clinical at the right moments with that hat trick, obviously the feature. And that halftime score was Leinster 22, Leicester Tigers 10. Well, before we return to the pod, first a little reminder of all the different places you'll find us in the Ruggersphere. First of all, we have a radio slot every Friday after the 5 o'clock news on Dublin South 93.9 FM. Then when it comes to online, as well as our main site at harpandrugby.com, we also have a presence on X, formerly known as Twitter. We're on YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and new this season, we're on both Threads and Blue Sky. So if you're on any or all of those platforms, please do give us a follow to check out our full range of Leinster and Ireland rugby content. And so the second half kicked off and Leinster tried to build on their lead, Mark.
Yeah, it almost was a carbon copy of the first quarter. when you put it to us that I was taking the first and third quarters, when I look back on it again today on a rewatch, I'm like, yeah, that's actually pretty similar. You know, Leinster hold on to the ball quite well, put a few phases together. And after a couple of penalties, they eventually get down into sort of 5-7 meters out. And after a good catch and drive and maul, the referee somehow sees James Cronin put the ball down amongst all that bodies. And I think on a second look, you can see that he does get it down. But it might have been worth a TMO look to see how he got the ball back from that maul initially. But it was a well-worked try and thoroughly deserved. You know, they put us under pressure at the ruck. It was quick. And actually, Van Portfield had a really good sort of 10-15 minutes. And I don't think he kicked the ball. He might have kicked the ball once. And then maybe that's something they can look at going forward. You know, when he puts his foot on the ball in the middle of the park off a quick ball and slows everything down, it affects their attacking shape. But they attacked down our blind side a couple of times, got a bit of purchase. And during the 20 minutes, and indeed in the first half, they had a couple of times, you know, the Neonarbor defense is working well, but it's still very tight. And as Keno said, there was a couple of occasions where there's sort of 9-10 people around the ruck. And Jordan Larmer got caught out once with a kick over his head. And another kick across field a couple of times to the Haskell Collins channels put us under some pressure. But the first sort of 10 minutes of that second half were again Leicester sort of getting their their shape together and going for it. And then once again, we relied on a bit of a gamble from Robbie, you know, about, I think it was about 47, 48 minutes in, and he picks it off lovely in the channel. But you can see the pass is a little bit labored, but Robbie's way onside. There wasn't even a question of looking at it again. He just timed it so well. And The only thing I was afraid of was about 10 strides in, I thought he was going to pull his hamstring, to be honest with you. And I was kind of dreading that. And I was like, oh, please don't. But then he sort of got another gear going and got it under the sticks. And then that brought that, just that nullified the 7 points from Leicester at the start. Again, not a quarter where either team put their own stamp on it. Both teams had moments of attack and defence where, you know, people were criticising Leinster for only winning by 14 points. I'll take that all day in a knockout phase of Europe. I think on the English commentary over here, they were mentioning that playing in front of 1,200 people in Milan in 1995 when this competition kicked off, and then, you know, expecting 30,000 yesterday and probably full house next week against La Rochelle, how far we've come. And I can remember games where we're playing Border Reavers and two men and two dogs might have been at the RDS. And, you know, it's come a long way, both as a tournament, and we've come a long way as a province. So some people are being a bit patronizing with the win and being a bit cocky. But that 20 minutes at the start of the second half, Leicester threw everything they had at us, and we nullified it. You know, we were pretty comfortable, and I don't want to sound arrogant at all, but we were pretty comfortable. Whenever they put the pressure on us, we answered. You know, we got another score, be it through Whiskey Man himself or Robbie picking them off. But when Leicester got through the phases and it wasn't quick ball, you backed us every time to get a turnover or somehow to alleviate their pressure.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, that was a real pivotal moment, I think, that interception try, because they literally just turned us over before it. It was kind of the transition. Usually it's the team that was attacking when they lose it that's got to struggle to adjust. But in this case, maybe it was Leicester that were a bit slower to adjust, because Liebenberg had just ripped one I think at midfield, and they were sending it out wide, and that's when Robbie picked it off. So that really could have gone either way, you know. And of course, earlier that Cronin try came right after I think Lowe got a yellow card for a deliberate knock on. It was, you know, you could argue he was wrapping in the tackle, but I mean, if it went the other way, I suppose we'd be calling for it ourselves. They checked it for a penalty try. It wasn't, that was fine, but Leicester scored immediately off of that. And so it was, and you know, I totally know what you mean about definitely take a 14 point win at the end of the game, but yeah, when it's still 14 points and it's ticking into the fourth quarter, it was just that pesky that you just want to get that little pesky extra little penalty or something somewhere just to nick it over the 15, because we couldn't seem to get out of that 14 point distance. One converted try could have made it a close finish.
If it was a start to the season when we were conceding tries that we normally didn't concede, where we were trying to get used to the new system that they're playing, you could fully understand that, how 14 points is never 100% guaranteed win. You know, the way some teams can attack off of restarts nowadays, you know, 14 points is, it's not that it's nothing, but it is a lead that can be got in a quick period of time. But one thing, I think we mentioned it, definitely the commentators mentioned it, I think Keenan might have mentioned it, our scramble defense is so good that if you're in that 13 channel or the wing channel, if you do make a mistake and miss an intercept or somebody floats it over you or whatever, you would expect the inside backs and the back row to be covering and corner flagging really well, so that it allows you to have that bit of confidence to go full bore when you're going for an intercept. When people half-ass an intercept, it's a knock-on, it's a yellow card, it's a potential penalty try. When they go for it, it's usually 7 points the other way.
Yeah. Simple as that. And we had, and about that Scrabble defense or the overall defensive system, we had Nathan Johns from the Irish Times on last week, and he said he worked out that that game against the Bulls was actually the 15th game since Nienaber said those famous words about his system betting in. So we'll have no problems with the defending for the rest of the season, apparently, according to that. I think that might be one of the biggest regrets of the thing you might say. But it is true. We've seen the evidence so far that the team does seem to be buying into it. And but it's not just working that when if they do let space out wide and the attacking team does advance a little bit further up, we are able to compensate and get over and hold them out again and set up again and make it difficult, and we were showing that.
I think one of the things that Keno pointed out there about our turnover rates, we don't have sevens that get jackals all the time or eights that get jackals, but what we do have are absolute noses at breakdowns like Josh. And the biggest nose in world rugby has to be Caleb Dorris. How he swings his leg around and slows it down and tries to hook it back legally. But he's a 6'4", 18 stone lump to move. And that second and half a second allows guys in positions outside the guard and bodyguard to reset so bloody quickly. So if you're a center that has to reload, reload and reload and reload, you love Baird, you love Conan, and Caelan Dorris is your favorite player on the pitch as far as I'm concerned with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And doing well with the skipper's role, I think, as well, so far. So, it might be more in that in his future, I'd say, but we'll see. But, so that half, like you said, we had that 14-point lead now. But, of course, there were one or two things that were going wrong. And kind of right at the end of this period of the quarter, we had this little kind of snafu between Ross Byrne and Gibson Park at the 22. It was just a simple routine pass. They were kind of thinking two plays ahead, and they ended up throwing it forward and knocking on. So there was the final quarter of the match, which I think there's no doubt about it. This is this week's shitty quarter, but we'll pass it over to Keno anyway. It started with the scrum outside our 22.
Yeah. Leicester looked like they probably would have scored off of that resulting scrum, but for an errant last pass, thankfully, I mean, they had their moments unforced as well, thank God. Yep, and then Leinster were rewarded for a strong scrum off that knock on, and that's proof that Cian Healy can absolutely still do it. He's going to be key for us through to the end of the season, no doubt, despite his superannuation. Yeah, there's a couple of other bits and bobs. Then Jenkins gives away a really silly penalty for playing the ball on the ground. He was on completely the wrong side, and there was just absolutely no need for it. There was no benefit to it either. He gave away some deep access there and then immediately follows it up with a really clumsy knock-on that, to be honest, could have been a penalty. That looked a lot more deliberate than the previous one, which we were penalised for. So, but then, yeah, off that scrum, Kieran Frawley nearly scored an absolute... It was set up to be a world if he'd caught that intercept. It just about got away from, he should have worn the lifts in the boots for the match, and he would have got that one, I reckon. But the scrum off of that was a massive against the head penalty for Leinster. Again, really just kind of dominating the scrum at that point, which was good given how badly our line out had been going throughout the game, so it was good that we had one of the set pieces kind of tied down at that point. From that was kind of sets up the last try. It was a penalty kick down the line from there, clean take, goes to a ruck. Gibson Park's box kick from there is too short, but Larmer knocks it back and Jenkins has a nice little carry. A bit of phase play, and then Osborne again. He was at first receiver. It was nice to see him at first receiver, actually, given a young fella that much responsibility for play from the centre. It's good to see. So he draws two and puts Baird away through the gap really, really efficiently. And Baird, like, bullocks up the field, rides one tackle, offloads to Conan, who steps his man, lovely little step, and just plain sailing then through between the posts. And that really kind of, that was almost all she wrote, to be honest, other than Tigers decided they weren't quite done, weren't quite done with us. They had a nice little run down the 5 meter channel, and to be honest, they, you know, that would have been a well earned try, but they kind of well covered by the scramble defense, and they fluffed it in the corner. Then it kind of ended up flinging it to the ground almost and into touch. But then, yeah, we had probably the worst line out I've seen us have in a long time. It was a horrible miscommunication, completely overthrown directly into the hands of a charging Tigers player who just falls over the line. And the look Baird gave Kelleher really said it all. Like, I have no idea what happened there. I have no idea whose fault it is, but I'm sure they're not going to enjoy hearing about it on Monday. Because that one was horrendous. It was the cheapest try we give away this season, possibly last three seasons. And from there, then that was then all she wrote.
Yeah, I literally on the rewatch after that try, I stopped rewatching. There was I knew there was nothing really to get through to the end of the game. Yeah, no, it was it wasn't that much of a final quarter. The Conan try, I mean, he'd had one earlier in that third quarter where we thought he'd gotten over, but he just lost it at the last second. So it's kind of poetic that he did end up getting that try. The only other, I suppose, thing of that might be a concern or work on or something they'll have to talk about was that not one, not two, but three of those high balls actually end up hitting the turf. Obviously, you know, they'll know what happened. I do remember one of them because I, you know, from where I am really high up, but I get a good view and you can see who's supposed to be claiming it. But there was a couple of times, I think once it was low and once it was Keenan, when they start running in, but then they stop and they're like, nope, they've either lost it in the sky because maybe the wind or the height of it or whatever, but they've just decided they're not going for it, which leaves the people in the middle in kind of a no man's land, and there's nobody claiming for it because they assume Cummings in for it. But that shouldn't happen once, let alone three times.
I think that's a tactic, and I think it's something that O'Gara will spot, is when they kick directly to one person, even if there's guys around, they're usually okay. When they kick in between the fullback and the winger, there is that little bit of lack of communication, it seems. I know personally, if I was coaching La Rochelle, I'd be telling Hastoy early doors, stick it up between Keenan and probably Larmer, to Larmer, be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, Lowe's a little bit more solid under there. He's got that sizable backsides and thighs where he can turn them into guys and knock them backwards. But I think Larmer is a little bit less confident, maybe. He's definitely more hesitant about getting up into the air with guys around him. So I think we might see a barrage of bombs from Hastoy if he's starting at the 10 channel next week.
Yeah, it was just something that we'd be talking about it if it happened once, and it was just happening so often. But like you say, overall, we were taking our chances. We were clinical when we needed to be. The defending was pretty much solid. Leicester did put it up to us, and they kind of stayed within that kind of two try kind of range. And you know, we were making the odd mistakes here and there, but we definitely deserved the win. And like you say, the final score was Leinster 36, Leicester Tigers 22. So that win puts Leinster through to next week's quarterfinals, where we will, of course, resume our acquaintance with La Rochelle, who earlier edged out the Stormers in Cape Town. The match takes place at the Aviva Stadium, kicking off at 5:30 p.m. on Saturday. The winner of that will face the winner of Northampton versus the Bulls, with the Saints having triumphed over Munster at lunchtime on Sunday. Over in the other half of the draw, Toulouse will host Exeter, while Harlequins will play Bordeaux. In the Challenge Cup, both Irish provinces went away to top 14 opponents, Ulster and Montpellier, and they now go to Claremont, while Connacht came back from 11 points down in the second half to overcome Pau, and the boys from the West must now travel to Treviso in the quarterfinals. Not an easy task for either of them, but confidence must be high in both camps. Finally, in the Hong Kong Sevens, both Irish teams made it out of their pools, but had mixed fortunes from there as the women lost to Australia and Japan to finish outside the top six again, while a Terry Kennedy hat-trick saw the men into the final four. And although the French were too good for us in that semi-final, the boys rallied to beat Australia to earn third place and cement our position as second overall in the standings. And it should be said that both teams look to have clinched their spots in the top eight at the end of the season. So it has been a good campaign overall, for sure. All of which brings us to our final thoughts, starting with Mark.
Yeah, job done. Like, you know, a lot of knowledgeable people will say yeah, job done. Let's move on. Let's focus on training. And I think everybody that was interviewed after the game had the same sort of sentiments that probably we will have. People that are moaning about the game, I'm like, shut up. 36 points, five tries. You're a gobshite. You know nothing. Move on.
That's my TikTok to advertise this pod right there. Just that little clip, that'll do me.
I'm not saying there's not, as you said yourself, it's not like we haven't got work ons during the week for the coaches to concentrate on, especially. And I don't think they'll have to get the players wound up for it. It's our current nemesis at home, where despite us winning earlier on in the season, they've picked up wins left, right, and center. And they went to South Africa, which is a long old trip, and they beat the favorites. You know, the Stormers were like 10-point favorites for a lot of people. And I'm like, I don't think you realize how good La Rochelle are. And our defense is going to have to be better. It's going to have to be as good as it was in the southwest of France at the start of the season, because Skelton's there. Antonio was there. You know, they are our Achilles heel. And until we put them out in a knockout game or a final, they'll have it all hanging over us. So I'm not going to say we're going to win. I'm not going to say we're going to lose. It's just going to be a bloody tough game. And hopefully we're focused for it. But this game, again, I don't want to sound too arrogant or egotistical by saying we knew we were going to win. We weren't, but we just had that little bit extra. You know, we were more clinical. Five tries to three is probably a fair result of the game. Leicester butchered two tries, you know, be it through pressure of our scramble defense, but they left points out there. They always seem to do. And you know, McCarthy again showing well. JGP, absolute man of the match, showing up after 29 minutes with a hat trick, you know, an almost masterclass. And as Keno said, if it was Anton Dupont that was playing, people would be screaming from the trees about how good he was. He was that good, you know. Every time we spoke about it, didn't really matter who wears 10, because, you know, he's dragging seven guys around him on both sides of the ruck. He's interesting all those players. So the 10 basically has to be a facilitator, and that's what Ross is really good at. So I thought Ross had a fine game. I thought Harry had a fine game last week, and he did really well when he came on again. We're in a pretty good place, you know. We're in a pretty good place, but we have our biggest nemesis against us this coming weekend.
Yeah, I mean, like, as big an occasion as it was on Saturday night, like, it's one of those games that, in the context of the wider Champions Cup, no one's going to remember that game going forward. It's like, from the URC, you look at the a couple of weeks ago, okay, we beat Bulls, but the week before that, we went away at Zebra. It's a bit like that, you know, no disrespect to them, but those are the games that a team like Leinster isn't going to remember going forward. It's the matches that it's going to come next week. And like you say, this could be the biggest test of that defensive system. Just making an absolute hames around the breakdown and getting bodies in there and doing that. We're coming up against exactly the kind of team that will hopefully disrupt and hold at bay. So there's going to be plenty to harp on next week. And for all we're saying about, oh, Leinster can't play like this next week, Leinster can't do this against La Rochelle, that's true, but La Rochelle will have their work-ons as well. It's going to be a leveler. It's going to be a really big contest going on next week. There'll be loads to talk about, Keno.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. They were by no means perfect down against Stormers at all. They found... what they needed to get it done in the second half, you know, and that's the danger of them, is that they're problem solvers. You know, it might not be overly complicated what they do, but they're very good at doing it, and they will just kind of keep rolling until the problem is solved. We've gotten past that on them once, but that was at the beginning of a very rocky start for their season, and they have improved since then. Although that is only their third away win so far this season, so you know. But anyway, that's a next week problem.
Mm.
Game against Tigers. Look, I think, yeah, we did quite well. All things considered, Tigers did quite well, and they kept us to what, 41% possession for the game, which is definitely lower than Leinster are used to. But for that 41% possession, we had 18 line breaks to their six. So the attacking systems are definitely there. They're working. Like we're manufacturing those breaks.
They were very, very well put together. Yeah, you could see it. You could see it happening. It was really well done.
Yeah, and it's not strike moves. It's just play and play in ball in hand play,
Yeah.
which is great to see. So we're not relying on anything, despite having kind of la same amount of kicks as Tigers. I honestly thought, yeah, they were going to kick more than they did, but it was about evens. We carried a fair bit less, but we made a nearly 1.5 times the meters with ball in hand, alongside those line breaks. The big work on for me is the line out. It was unacceptable. It was just bad, and it didn't cost us this time. But if we have a line out performance like that against La Rochelle, it will absolutely, they'll murder us. It's going to be tough enough in the scrum as it is. Yesterday went quite well. I was pretty happy with it. I think having Joe Mack in there really does bolster our power in the scrum, and it just makes it that bit easier to present the good pictures that the referees like. There's a couple of notable player stats as well in the game. Henshaun Osborne got through 21 tackles apiece, 10 and 11 between them, which was, that is the they're the second and third highest tackle count across the team. So they were made to work, and it went pretty well all in all. Gibson Park got three line breaks. Only other Leinster player to get three line breaks was Ryan Baird, but he did it off of six carries. Half of his carries were line breaks, which is just a pretty savage stat. Like he's really exciting to watch with the ball in hand, and I think he could. Yeah, he should play a big part in a potential success against La Rochelle next week. And then Dan Sheehan, of course, is good for two line breaks himself as well. He's always good for a carry, is Dan. Yeah, there was Conan was on great form. His form this season has been magnificent. I've been really happy, so happy to see him in good form and get back to the levels that we'd seen of him pre that kind of terrible injury. And that time he had really didn't do him any good, but he's certainly come back to a really impressive level again. Other than that, yeah, all the results this weekend, poor Munster, poor Stormers, happy Bulls, happy Ulster and Connacht. I have to say, I am sorry for Munster. Like they've had a that was a tough, tough ask, and they did what they needed to for about an hour, and then they just completely ran out of steam. And you can understand it. And to be honest, I would have loved a Munster Leinster semi-final in Croke Park, so we could renew the beating of them in Croke Park for another decade to come. But
They
it wasn't to be.
really need to work on, you say after an hour, they didn't score after 28 minutes.
I know. I
You
know.
know, their last quarters in a lot of their games, they die. They really do die a death, either hoping for an intercept or it's so attritional that you do feel sorry for the players. And I know they have an injury crisis, and I know they apparently had some illness going around. But if guys like Tadhg Byrne play like that with puking on the sideline at the end of the game, like he's some player. But
Magnificent.
I can see why you feel sorry for him, but quit the excuses, lads. They've got to run out sometime.
Well, I think they'll be concentrating on the URC from now on out. So they put
Yeah,
paid to us last year, so we've got some payback there to give as well.
we might be focusing on the URC this time next week as well. Not
Yeah, let's not go there. Let's not go
okay,
there. Cut that out. Cut that
yeah,
out. Not
that's
having
it.
any of
It's well, cut
that.
one out. I didn't hear anything. My headphones weren't working. No, seriously, no, that's brilliant, lads. Listen, we're going to leave it there. Many thanks again to Mark and Kino for joining me, and I hope to have back on again soon, lads. Thanks a lot.
No,
Cheers,
thanks, Jack.
fellas. Take
Cheers,
care.
lads. As for our next batch of Harpin, look out for our 80-plus column during the week. Dan and La Rochelle are back on our radar. We'll have a preview on Friday, and we'll be recording the wrap pod on Sunday evening. As ever, keep up with our content on social media. The links are in the program notes. In the meantime, stay safe, everyone. Slán.